last week we started a series that we're calling Generous Orthodoxy, and I'll just give you a little bit. Last week I said, yes, this series is about that topic. We're talking about the role of LGBT people in the church, and then eventually, specifically, Imago Dei Church. And so last week what we did is we started way back, and I basically took the whole 40 minutes in here to kind of say, here's how we've been talking about Generous Orthodoxy in our church over the last 8 years. And then the format for the next couple, next 2 months is 8:30. We have the service and then a discussion in the second service slot. And I'll just tell you, I had so much fun last week in the second service. And I think I've had lots of people who've said to me later on, like, that was amazing. And I was like, yeah, it was a lot of fun. In fact, there was somebody visiting and they're like, it was fun to see you just kind of bouncing everywhere you went, because I was like really wound up. And we tried to put that online. You can go listen to it, but it's like listening to one side of a conversation, my side. And so you missed a lot. This morning we're going to do something a little different. In that time, we're going to try to run a microphone around the room to try to capture more of that. But so you're invited after this time this morning to stick around afterwards. So last week in the discussion time, we asked the question, what is a church? And we found out, it was a surprise to me, a little bit about how anti-authoritarian you all are. So I asked the question in the middle of that time, like, in the spectrum of, like, high structure, church, authority, we use the Catholic Church as an example of high structure kind of thing. How many of you have that kind of leaning over here? Or how many of you, like, it's the Wild West of church authority and structure and leadership over here? And, like, two people raise their hand for over there, and everybody else is, like, anti-authoritarian, burn the place down kind of people. Including the pastor. So we're an odd collection of people. And so that was fun. And then talked about church and authority and some of those things. And it was just a really fruitful conversation. And I, just so you all know too, I'm already out of breath. Slow down. To let you all know, I will try to, as this series goes along, to blog, to post more stuff to my blog. So last week I posted an open letter to Brian McLaren about Generous Orthodoxy that I know lots of you commented on, and it was fun. And then posted about this idea of church authority later in the week. And so really just encourage you to read that and share it and comment on it and whatever else you want to do there. So that brings us to this morning and talking about foundations. The reason I started all the way back at this is where the church started last week, and the reason we're doing the five directives today is because foundations are important. There was a move a couple years ago that the buzzword in church is to be a missional church. And the idea behind it, and it was good, it was that churches so often get about ideas and about Sunday gatherings, and they forget that there's a mission for the people of God in the world that has something to do with the poor, and has something to do, I think, with the planet, and has something to do with all kinds of things. And so churches started getting on this missional thing for a while, and it was a fad for a while to be known as a missional church. And that's fine and good and all those things. Many of those churches are my friends in ministry, and I love that. The problem is that when you become an issue-driven church, you miss out on something. What missional churches found out eventually is that, wait a minute, we also have to do formational things over here, and we also have to do community things. And so we've never striven here to be an issue-driven church. And I don't think anybody sitting here wants us now to become an issue-driven church. And instead, we want to have deep foundations that allow us to talk about a whole lot of things. And that's not just us. We're not unique in that. There's a lot of great churches out there who think this way. Like, it's more important to have really good foundations. Last year, I think, if you don't know, but most of you know, that last year I built a house. And when I say I built a house, I don't mean what most people mean when they build a house. I mean, like, literally built a house. And so this is my house, by the way, is held to the foundation on the strength of a 7-year-old's arm. Come on in. So I checked all those bolts later. This is the foundation wall, the basement wall, and then you see like rebar sticking up out of it for the front porch, and then the boys there, Jackson and Maddox, are bolting down the sill plate. That's what holds your house onto a foundation. Some of you, if you knew people, or maybe your house was involved in the Washington tornado, know now that a house can get totally blown away, and if your foundation is good, you just rebuild it off the foundation because the foundation's good. But what they found in Washington is that some of the houses, the violence of the tornado was so strong that if you see right in front of Jackson, he's the one in back, right in front of him there's a little tiny bolt sticking out of the foundation. That bolt is actually about 16 inches long, and it goes down into the foundation. It has a hook on it, and they put it in there while the concrete is wet. And so when the concrete dries, you've got a hook into the concrete so that for the foundation to lift off that, if that's been bolted on well, if it's been bolted on well, for the foundation to break, the tornado would actually have to rip those bolts out of 16 inches of concrete, which it did in Washington. The tornado was so strong that in some houses, the foundation was broken by the force of the wind. And if the foundation's bad, you basically have to knock it all in and start over, dig a new basement. It gets to be a lot more expensive. So the reason this morning that we're talking about the directives is because I think they're about foundations. They're the things that I will just say to you in a minute, I'll get there, but what we wrote 8 years ago, I still deeply believe in with everything in me. It's why we exist as a church. If you are all to band together and come to me and say, well, we've decided to change two of the five directives, honestly, I'd probably go looking for another job because that's not the Imago Dei Church that I think we are and why we all gather, all of us anti-authoritarians gathering in one place. I think it's because we can all say, when it comes to those foundations, yeah, those things are so important to us. When we wrote them... So here's how it went about, is 8 years ago, sitting in my dining room, and I'm a hopeless romantic Italian, so it was soft and candlelit, and there was soft music playing, when we sat down and started talking about these for the first time, and there was three couples, and we sat there and started saying, okay, if we are going to start a church, what's going to be the foundation? What is going to be the things that hold us together? Now, I'll tell you a little bit behind the story. 4 years before that, the Browns and the Deans, we had had a conversation like that at the time. We were at a church in Pekin. We had served together 4 years at the church that Corey and I grew up in. And we had talked about, let's plant a church back then. And if we had built that church back then, we were immature enough. I'll speak for all of us. Is that fair? I was just going to say for me, but I think you all agree. Right? We were all immature enough that the name of our church, and it might have been all kinds of things, but it actually would have been, we're the church that isn't First Baptist in Pekin. And we would have said, how do we want to do worship? Well, not like First Baptist in Pekin, you know? And how do we want to dress on Sunday mornings? Not like First Baptist. Like everything in us was so reactionary, like we don't want to be that. And I think at that age of 27, 28, whatever we were, whatever I was, everybody else is younger, you would have asked us, what do you want to be? It would have been a harder conversation. And so 4 years went by, and then we found ourselves in the room, and the Sluttons apparently brought balance to the force, and we started asking, like, when we left Northwoods, I was happy. I liked my job. I liked the people I worked with. It was fine. But there was something calling us forward, and we sat down for the first time. It's funny today, somebody asked me, like, was asking me about the story of our church not too long ago, and I said, it's funny to me that we are a very different church than Northwoods. I love them, but we're a very, very different church. And I don't think any of us sitting around the table 8 years ago said, how can we be different from Northwoods? Not at all. That was never part of the conversation. It was about, what do we want to be? And out of that foundation, a house was built. We grew into something. And it looks very, if you're at Northwoods today, we look very, very, very different from Northwoods. But not because we ever set out to be the not Northwoods community church, but rather because we said, this is the foundation we're building our church on, and what's come out of that is this. Does that make sense? So that's what the conversation is. Now, when you sit in a place like that, it'd be interesting. We don't have time. Maybe if we have time in the discussion later, maybe I'll ask this, but maybe it's a fun thought exercise for some of you. If you were handed a blank sheet of paper and I said, hey, you get to plant a church. You get to start a church. What are your foundational things? And it doesn't have to be five. It can be one. It can be three. It can be seven. Some churches have 15-page documents that says this is the foundational documents. That's fine. They can do that. Think through that. Like, it's a little bit daunting. Like, oh, we can do anything. What do we do? And so that's where this comes from. And so some of this language, I'm sure none of it's original with us. You can probably find the books that we were reading at the time through there. You can probably find other churches that say something similar. I know the language of directives came from Mars Hill Bible Church in Grand Rapids. They use that language of directives. And so we stole that language. We stole things at the time from Jacob's Well and some other places. So when you're doing this exercise of of writing some kind of a directive thing, you have to face this question all the time. Is this actually who we are? Is this who we wish we were? So you've all been involved in this, right? You've had a boss who went to a conference and he came back and he or she said, let's have goals. Let's talk about our corporate culture and let's make a statement. And you've made a statement. And at the end of the day, you've gotten done. You've like, that is not who we are. That's who our boss wishes we were. But this place sucks, right? I mean, we've done that before. We've all, and then those exercises, like, then we put those in a filing cabinet and never look at them again, but we did the thing. That's the challenge. And I'll just be honest, 8 years ago, there was some hoping. Let's hope that we become these things. And I'll say we're not perfect, right? I can look at the directives today and I could have, we'll talk about this more in the discussion later because we're going to open up this a little bit. But there's places in the directives that I think, man, I wish we did more of that. I wish we were more like that. And there's things that we could, there's ways we could grow into that. But there's also things where I say like, wow, it's beautiful what's come because of that. Because it wasn't, they maybe were aspirational 8 years ago, but now we make decisions based on those five directives. We've ordered our life as a church around those things. It spills out of teachings and spills into our ministries all over the place. So this shouldn't be new information. When I put up the five directives, you all shouldn't be like, oh, I've never heard these before. If so, I've done a terrible job. And if you haven't come through Imago Story, we've unpacked these more, but some of you, it's been a very long time. So this morning, here's the plan for the morning, is I'm going to race through the five directives. I've got about a half hour, so that gives me about 6 minutes through each directive, plus a nice tack on to the Apostles' Creed at the end. So I'm going to move quickly, all right? And then we'll unpack those in the discussion time. Here's what's going to happen this morning in the discussion time. I've asked six people to sit on a panel, and I'll jump out there with you all, and we'll ask them questions. I've got some of the people that were involved in writing them, some people currently involved in leadership, and some of the staff to just kind of talk about what were you thinking? Not in a bad way, but what were you thinking? How does this still ring true? How do you wish we were expressing this one differently? And, you know, that kind of thing. And we'll just have a dialogue. And we're kind of going to have to do the same thing in the discussion this morning. We'll limit them to 10 minutes per topic, and then we'll go on to the next one so we can get through all of them. So the first one is everything, and we'll just read that. It says, we believe that all of life, food, friends, work, money, pleasure, sleep, is spiritual. We do not fragment our lives. We live with a growing understanding that everything we do relates to God. So I think what happens is that if I asked for a vote here in the church, everybody would, if I just said, like, what's your favorite directive, we probably all have an inclination towards one of the directives. I know that for some of you, it's the mission one, right? Like, I hear people say things like, I'm at this church because of the breakfast. Because of what you all do on Sunday morning, I want to be a part of that. That's why I'm here at the church. And so my guess is if we did a survey, the mission one is really popular here. And then there's some people that are really into community stuff and the community one. And different ones would hit people different ways. I'll lay my cards out on the table. This is my baby. This is the one that, at least in this season of my life, is at the cutting edge of my own journey. This is what I'm thinking about nearly every day. I'm gearing my own spiritual practices around this idea of trying to live with this growing awareness that every moment is spiritual, that God is everywhere and in everything and is asking me to live in this moment, not in my future, not in my past, not replaying conversations, not wishing things were different than they actually are, but rather that right here, right now, in this very moment, God is here and he's inviting me into an awareness of what he's doing in every moment. That's what I'm deeply passionate about. So for me, this is my favorite of the directives. There's this quotation I love, and I've shared it probably before in the past. It's from a guy named G.K. Chesterton, who is a contemporary of C.S. Lewis. And he says this, and I think this is awesome about this idea of everything is spiritual. He says, because children have abounding vitality, because they are in spirit, fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. They always say, do it again, and the grown-up person does it again until he is nearly dead. Think about playing hide-and-seek with a three-year-old. They never tire, right? That's the point. For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony, but perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says every morning, do it again to the sun, and every evening, do it again to the moon. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but he has never got tired of making them. Isn't that awesome? I love that. It may be that he has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grow old, and our father is younger than we. To me, that captures the essence of what it, this idea of everything. So on December 31st, I got a new tattoo. And so I would show it to you all, but it's just cold. I'm not going to strip down, right? So that to me is just a big, big deal for me. Like right now in my life still, this ongoing idea that everything is spiritual. And we're trying to, a lot of our focus of our formation communities, actually after this morning, I'm racing down to Springfield to spend time with our formation communities. And next week, we'll give you information about our Imago formation community number 3. We'll have all the information next week for you. But it's about that idea of growing into this increasing awareness that everything is spiritual. I want to ask questions, but we'll save questions for the conversation. Is that all right? And if it's not, tough. Mission. We believe being formed in the image of God means being a reflection of Jesus, even if imperfect, to the people around us. We are committed to promoting the values of the kingdom of God, justice, equality, mercy, and grace. Furthermore, we honor, respect, and partner with other organizations that may be different than us in order to serve the community. This week, I got invited to sit with the Central Illinois chapter of the Interfaith Alliance. And so I went to a lunch with the Central Illinois chapter of the Interfaith Alliance for the first time. I didn't know there was such a thing. I think they call themselves SICA. Something, I don't know. It's exactly what you would expect it to be. I end up running into my friend Marvin Hightower there, and he's probably my age. And then there was another guy there who was 24, and then everybody else was like 70. And it was mostly the UU churches and some of those folks. And it's funny because I was telling Jennifer when I went home is that I'm probably, well, at least in that room, I was the closest thing to an evangelical that they had in the room, which is scary for them. And mostly scary for the evangelical community in Peoria that I'm their representative. But the way I grew up is we wanted nothing to do with these folks because they were apostate, they were heretics, they didn't really believe in Jesus in the right ways that we thought they had to believe in Jesus. And so for me, mostly it was fairly boring, but it's important to me that I want to be a part of these kinds of things because it flows out of this idea that the kingdom of God is actually really big, that the church is actually really, really broad, and there's a lot of different expressions out there of what it means to be Christian, and I want to be involved, and I want to partner with those people, even if I'm, okay, here's the other way of saying it. I'm probably the most conservative person in the room, right? Like, even if that, like, that's okay. I want to be there. And that drives us a lot in terms of mission. The story that this whole directive came out of, one of the stories for me, and I've shared this many times before, is when I was in college at the Baptist college I went to in Ohio, Billy Graham was coming to Columbus, Ohio. And of course, the Billy Graham Crusade was asking people to staff like the prayer rooms and all that stuff, the counselors and all that stuff. And our college made a strategic decision that we would not participate with the Billy Graham Crusade. That tells you how conservative we were, right? Like Billy Graham was to our left. That we would not participate in the Billy Graham Crusade because Billy Graham included Catholics in that whole conversation. And that wasn't acceptable to our school, and so no Billy Graham Crusade for us. And so that's where some of that directive grew out of. It's like, I just want to partner with anybody who's doing good for any reason. I want to be there, right there. Or where people are doing good, that's where we ought to be as a church. And so, process. We honor everyone's journey of faith. We exist to walk alongside people as they seek to discover deeper levels of faith and intimacy with God wherever they are in the process, whether spiritually seeking or spiritually mature. The analogy I really have used for years about this one is that I think faith is like an ocean, right? When you go swimming at a pool, at least the way generally our family of boys approaches a pool is you just run and jump, right? And you just get in. Like, there's no, like, maybe there's a little toe dipping because I'm the one that's always cold, but I'm the one that's like, too cold. It's not 90. But mostly just jump in. And I don't think faith quite works like that. That if faith is a journey, it really is like the ocean. Like, you start by getting your feet wet. And I was just thinking, when I did the Enneagram, I was telling people this about the Enneagram 2 weeks ago, like going into the Enneagram journey is like walking into an ocean. And I said to them, and I think it's true here too, is that the most turbulent part of getting into the ocean is where? It's right at the very beginning. There's a lot of turbulence right in that first couple steps getting in the ocean, which is why it's hilarious to take three-year-olds to the ocean. At least it was for me, but I'm a bad dad. And then it kind of calms out as you get deeper in. And that's the analogy that's been important to me for a long time, is that there are churches who come along and say, well, we want to be about those that are deep in the faith. We want to get serious about Bible study and discipleship, and we want to be serious. And then there's other churches that are like, we just want to get people in the water. Any way we can get them in the water, so free cars. That's not, churches actually do that at Easter, give away TVs and guns and stuff like that. And I'm not kidding. Wasn't there a church last year that was giving away guns, I think? Yes. That was your story? You knew a church that was giving away guns. All right. Boy, that would cause a ruckus at Imago Dei Church, wouldn't it? The pastor's name was Rusty Gunn. You're making this up. His name is Rusty Gunn, and they were giving away guns. Rusty guns. They were giving away rusty guns. Secretly, they were pacifists giving away rusty guns. Okay, where was I? So some churches want to be out the deep end, and some churches want to be like up on the beach helping people get in the water. And I just feel like a church ought to be at least trying to do all of those. This is probably, to me, the most challenging directive. Because as a church organizationally, it's really easy to drift one way or another. And I tell people, I have my own personal like bent. Like I've said, I think I've said to you all here or other places, like spiritual but not religious people really get me excited. When I hang out with that particular group, like that's the group that's kind of on the beach and kind of like, I'm thinking about getting in the water, splash me a little bit. That crowd really, like I have those kinds of conversations and I just get really, really ramped up. And sometimes, I'll be just putting my stuff out there. Sometimes the deep end of the pool, I went to seminary. I had long conversations about superlapsarianism. I just don't care anymore. Like, that's not my jam, right? And so some of us kind of have our preferences all over that. And so the challenge is to be engaged at all those levels. And I know, I'll tip my hand a little bit for the conversation later, is I know at times, because I'm up here all the time and because I'm on my own journey, like there's some of us have come out of faith traditions and we've had a lot, it's been turbulent trying to figure out what we believe. And some of us get stuck in some of those places. And I think back to my teaching years ago and I feel like I was a lot less gracious when I talked about, especially the Baptists. I've been so harsh on the Baptists for many, many years. Mostly just because it's my people. And I think that's true of all of us. We're harshest on our people. And because I know that stuff really well. And so, we're just trying, this one's about trying to be gracious and understand and lean into each other and acknowledge that you don't have to be where I am. I think that whole idea of I'm up here and you're down here is silly anyway, and maybe that's where the beach analogy breaks down too, but we're just working we honor the process that not, we're, yeah, community. I forgot we have communion. I didn't have a half hour. We have communion too. We believe that spiritual formation happens in the context of intentional relationships that can take many forms. For most of my career, up until the point that we wrote this, I had been in churches that put a lot of emphasis into small groups, small groups, small groups, small groups. And so, we've kind of gone round and round with small groups. Here's what often happens in churches in small groups is you're new. You come into the church and you say, I want to be in a small group. And so the small groups pastor, Dustin, assigns you to a small group. And then you go to small group and you figure out, like, these people are weird, right? And then you're like, but the pastor told me I had to go to this small group. And so now I'm stuck. Or the other flip side is this. You've built a small group, and you have this great intimacy going, and then the pastor comes along and is like, hey, I got somebody new for you, and they show up, and you're like, yeah, I never want to go back, right? So there's, like, because small groups are about relationships and dynamics, and who could have ever predicted that some of us would have married our spouse, right? Who could have ever predicted that that person would be attracted to that person, and those people are friends? Really? That doesn't make any sense to me at all. And so when you start talking about relationships, it gets really hard, because some people, have you ever had this happen where you have a friend A and friend B, and they don't know each other, and you just think, they're so much alike. These people really like each other. And then you introduce them, and they do not like each other. And you can't figure out why, because you like them both, and at least can't they bond about how much they love you? I mean, that does seem to make a whole lot of sense. Relationships are so tricky, right? In our lives, the things that causes us the most stress are probably relationships, because relationships are hard. And so this one, we didn't write it about small groups, but rather that the spiritual formation happens in all kinds of different relationships for me. Some of them look like what some of you know as small group. Some of them are just like one-on-one. There's a person that I like to meet with, and when we get together, we talk about spiritual stuff, and it's important to me, and it's meaningful to me. And some of them are people that you're with all the time. Some of you, this is your spouse. And then some of them are people... my friend Steve that's coming next week, he's important in my spiritual journey. And we talk about every 3 weeks. And we fast talk at each other, you know, like, just that's what happens. I had a lunch with this guy that I'm just getting to know this week, and we met for an hour and a half or two for breakfast. And both of us, by the time we get done with our breakfast, are like, I got to catch my breath, because we say more in an hour and a half than most people say in like a three-hour meeting, right? Because we're both high energy, high excitement, and we just kind of... And so, but man, there's something happening when I meet with him, and we're talking about the same things in different ways. And so I think that the idea here, well, I know that the idea here is that no man is an island, said somebody. I think Hugh Grant said it in About a Boy, but I know he was quoting somebody. I think it was John Donne, right? Am I right? Yes. I was going to say I should get mad literature props for that, but then when I just did, I don't know who wrote it and all that, then I just kind of, it showed that I was guessing. That no one's an island, that this spiritual formation thing at some point is going to require me to interact with people. I'm never really going to know how much I'm being formed into the image of Christ until it comes out in how I handle my family and my boys, right? And how I handle my relationships. That's going to be the mirror, I think, in which I'm going to see my formation. I can have all the right ideas about God, and these days I'm more distrustful about having the right ideas, and I'm much more interested in is this person or am I actually living out of the fruit of the Spirit? When people look at me, do they see, boy, Charlie is loving and kind and generous and gracious. Fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, and faith, meekness, and something. All this in Christ is Jesus living in me. That I'm so interested in, and that all those things don't come about because I understand a doctrine differently today. I mean, really, at this point in my life, I'm mostly like, who cares if you used to believe this way and now you believe this way? Are you loving? And that has something to say about this whole big topic, doesn't it? Tangent, you can say, I used to believe like this, and now I believe like this, and I'm just as much a jerk now to those people as I was a jerk to these people when I was those people. Right? And so that's going to be the challenge. When we move into Romans 14, Paul has like big things to say about, listen, no matter what you believe, this is how you treat people. And that how you treat people is maybe even more important than what you actually believe. That's just my tangent, and you can argue with me later. All right? Finally, Christian. We're Christians, just so you know. That's important. And somebody might say at this point, like, you haven't talked about Jesus. Here's Jesus. We're committed to historic Orthodox Christian faith as found in the Apostles' Creed. We're committed to generous orthodoxy under a banner of love and grace, and as such, we commit ourselves to faithful reading and study of the Bible, finding new and creative ways to live out what it teaches. Listen, this is a lot of things to say, all right? Can I set aside we're committed to generous orthodoxy? Because we're going to talk about that for the next 2 months, right? That's what we're talking about, is what does it mean to have generous orthodoxy? The love and grace part is the thing I was just saying about you can change positions and still be a jerk to the other side now. And that's the love and grace part. And so we're going to be unpacking that over the next several weeks. As such, we commit ourselves to the Bible. I'm going to spend all of next week talking about the Bible. If we're going to talk about this issue, I was telling somebody not too long ago, the reason we have to talk about this is because 2,000 years of church history says one thing. And if we're going to say something different in the contemporary church, we have to have a conversation with the Bible. And so we're going to talk about next week the phrase, and I love this. Steve gave this from somewhere, house rules. Like, we have a lot of space for lots of people who may be different than us about how they think about the Bible, but we have some house rules. When I stand up here and I open the Bible, I have some stuff going on in my head about what the Bible is and how we use it that you all probably ought to know so you can filter what I'm saying. So when we got to, like, what are the core doctrinal beliefs? The reason we chose the Apostles' Creed is just it's the oldest one. It's the one that's been around the longest. It emerges pretty quickly in the church. They don't even know who exactly wrote it or where it came from. It appears that it was a form of worship in the early church, that they would recite this together as a creed like we do here in a couple minutes when we take communion. Most churches, most evangelical churches at least today, use the Nicene Creed because it says more about Jesus, which I'm fine with too. I like the Nicene Creed. I'm happy with that one. But we just happened to choose the Apostles' Creed. And so, two notes. We don't explain this every week. We do on the website. The talk about Jesus descending to the dead, I think the line, if I understand the history right, just means that Jesus really died. He wasn't partly dead. To blathe, some of you know that as to blathe. He was actually died. And then the line about the Holy Catholic Church, that is not the Roman Catholic Church, but rather the Church Universal. Wherever it exists, wherever the church is gathering today, wherever people are churching. By the way, if you weren't here for the discussion last week, you missed that. And that was awesome about church versus churching. And you can ask somebody that was here last week to get the summary of that. The things I like about the creed is you can drive a truck through it theologically. Like, there's a lot of space for a lot of different beliefs about a lot of different things. I like that it's Trinitarian. Even early in the church, there's clear delineations between God, Jesus, and at least a nod to the Holy Spirit. It was thoroughly evangelical in that way. But there's all three of those, and it just says pretty easily and quickly. And it's small enough that I would guess that especially the kids in here that have grown up now in this church, at least for the last 3 or 4 years, reciting this on a regular basis, I know my kids can rattle it off. If we don't put them on the spot, please. And it's not just because they're Pastor Dort kids that we recite this at home, because we don't. But just the nature of being in this room and hearing it recited makes it familiar in their head, which is how it would have function in the early church, where people didn't have the same literacy as we do, all that stuff. So the question is, these are foundations, right? This is the close. This is the foundations. These five things are what we're building everything on. It's what we've been building everything on since we started 8 years ago. And I'll, again, tip my hand. I think they're truer of us. They are more descriptive of us. They're more actual today than they were aspirational back then. No, we're not perfect. And maybe some of you would have chosen different ones, or something else might have been important, or something not. But to me, and I know to our leadership, these are the things that we ascribe to. And so when we have any conversation in this church, it's going to come out of that foundation, not somebody else's foundation. Does that make sense? Let me pray, and then we'll move towards communion. Father, gosh, we're not perfect, and these are a very, it's the best we know for right now. And I think I'm thankful for how you've grown us into the things that we said we wanted to be a long time ago, that we're on that journey, that we're in that process of becoming the things that we hope to be. And God, I'm excited for this conversation and other conversations that are just the continued trajectory of what you started in us in a small group in our living room 10 years ago. And so I'm just grateful for that. I'm grateful for all these new friends and how this has gone and how different people now lead and all of it. And so just unite us, God, especially as we get into things that are more controversial, unite us in the things that really matter. And help us to know the difference. Help each one of us to know the difference between the things that really matter and the things that don't have to matter. Thank you for this body. Thank you for the willingness of people to engage in this conversation. In your name I pray. Amen.